pretty girls don't get tickets.
Maybe that's why I get tickets all the time.
Because I'm
ugly
slut.
Hey, Kate, how are you?
Hey, Caitlin. I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, like I said, I opened up this document and I see we have
21.
21.
Legendary moments.
If these legendary moments were years, they could drink.
They could drink. They're old enough.
Old enough to drink.
Imbibe. Yeah, whoa. I don't, yeah, so that's gonna be a marathon at the end of this.
For real, not a sprint.
So we are keeping it tight tonight.
Yes.
To make sure we can include all of your beautiful words, people. But holy shit.
Holy
blasted.
Shit.
Blasted the record. So thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, super flattered and thrilled that you guys are watching along with us and listening along and sending in the legendary moments. That's something that always amazes me, because we record these, you know, and we need like live input from our HB fam, and you guys do it week after week after week. You watch along with us. It's so amazing and just incredible.
Truly.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of our wonderful HB fam, we have some new patrons, Edwin and Sandra. Thank you so much for joining us and on our Patreon, and we hope you look forward to some of those fun perks, like the live streams. Yeah. We got to do a live stream last week, which was fun. No recording after, which was wild. It was
just a quick night. A quick one. So if you are a patron, you can go check that out on our secret Instagram.
Yeah, well, it was a secret Instagram, and then I logged in on my not-so-secret Instagram, and then some fringe friend sounds really callous and cold, because we just drifted apart.
Yeah, so well, she was like a good friend. Non-patrons.
Non-patrons.
Including your Uncle David.
Including my Uncle David, who's total, like, spotlight hog, and I just love and adore, and just, you can only imagine the text messages I got afterwards.
After we cut him.
Look, he goes, what happened? Did you block me? What did I say? What is this? Tell me. He's David. Like, where can I watch your record? He goes, I just love thinking about you doing something you love. And like, I would love to watch you do it or something. You know how he just gets so like sentimental and like so sweet. And then is also crazy and just, you know, it's David. He's the best.
I love David.
Speaking of crazy, too.
Yes.
That interview with Amir Talai.
Oh, my God.
So you guys definitely had some good rhythm going.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to interview Richard Greenleaf, a.k.a. owner of the Murder House. And so you all will hear a portion of that on today's episode. And our Patreon pals have already heard the full 45-minute episode interview that I had with him. So if you haven't joined, you're missing out on the full uncut goodness that is Amir Talai.
And it really was a great interview. He's fun.
Oh yeah, it was a great time for sure.
Mm-hmm. Faux show. So, you know, like we said earlier, we got 21 legendary moments, so we got to keep it tight. I'm usually the one who goes on the bird walks, as evidenced by me having to edit a show. I'm so sorry, Kate, still. So make sure you stay tuned all the way to the end for legendary moments from listeners like you. And remember, patrons get their legendary moments read in their entirety, which is usually pretty fun.
Usually. We'll see how we feel about that promise.
Check in with us in about an hour or so, and we'll let you know.
Yeah, exactly.
This episode of Hey Beautiful is brought to you by our Patreon Almighty 5 level members, Adam, Russell, Tish, Johnny, and Ben. Thanks to all of our patrons for their support of this show. Our Patreon works on a sliding scale. You give what you can each month, and you'll receive all the perks we offer. You can join for just as little as $2 a month at patreon.com/heybeautifulpod. So, Kate, a friend of mine who is a fan of the show, her husband found our Facebook and our Hey Beautiful Facebook page. And so we recently saw them and they became listeners and were curious about the Rachel's Cookies and Treats.
Ooh.
And so I was like, well, now that you're part of like the HB fam and you're a listener, you can have our coupon code and get 25% off your offer.
That's right.
And she was a little overwhelmed by what to go with.
It's hard to decide.
It really is. And so I told her she definitely had to get the Nonas.
Absolutely. That's the gateway drug. That's the gateway drug.
It really is. She went with the Nonas, brownies, and then the Nonas lemon and almond cookies. And she said that was just to try it, and then they would see how it went.
Yeah.
And she texted me immediately and said that they were incredible.
Of course.
I was like, they freeze really well. And she's like, they're not going to last that long.
We say it every time. We are not lying. And December is upon us. It's holiday season. If you're looking for a Hanukkah evening gift, Christmas gift, Kwanzaa, a just because, a solstice, just make up a reason to send Rachel's Cookies and Treats because you're getting 25% off with our code, which is HBFAM. So if you go to rachelscookiesandtreats.com, type in the code HBFAM, all caps, 25% off. And you can use that code as much as you want.
So send them to everybody on your guest list. Oh my God, your gift list this season. And you will be supporting a small, locally owned, family owned and operated, woman owned and operated business. And doing some good for other members of this HB fam, because the owners of Rachel's Cookies and Treats are part of this HB family.
That's right. They love
the show. They are listeners.
Too.
Yeah.
That's right. And they'll ship anywhere in the continental U.S. So if you can't go home this holiday season, send some cookies and treats from Rachel's Cookies and Treats.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Right. And now I want some.
You know what? So I was thinking about those all real ingredients, no preservative cookies and how delicious they are. And I think I'm going to branch out a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to definitely get the dozen of the molasses crinkle cookies, of course. Mm-hmm. Like that's always. Just always. That's a given. It's just a duh. Obviously, I'll get Chris and Jack their brownies, whatever. If anything, it keeps them off my molasses crinkles.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was thinking about going back to the peanut butter. Haven't had them in a while. They're so good.
I was thinking it's hot cocoa season. Why not a biscotti?
Oh,
for
girl,
dunking.
Yes.
For dunking.
For the dunking.
For the dunks.
Yes. Yes.
Can't wait.
Okay. All right. So I'm definitely going to use that 25% off coupon code to my advantage. And I'm going to get the biscotti. I'm going to get the peanut butter. I'm going to get the molasses crinkle. And I'm going to get the boys the brownies.
You're just such a wonderful mother and wife.
Yeah. Well, actually, I just really want the cookies. And so I have 25% off so I can afford to get some for the loved ones.
For the others.
Yeah.
So yeah, rachelscookiesandtreats.com. Get your cookie on.
This is season 4, episode 23, As Fast As She Can. Whew.
Second to last episode.
How did that happen?
Well, it's taken a full year.
You know, I believe it.
Yeah, yeah. We started season 4 at the top of 2020 before things went bananas.
Oh my God. I want to go back and listen to some of those like March episodes.
Oh my God. When it first started.
Yeah.
Oh, like, God.
What?
Even like February when we were like seeing people and like
holding hands. Nothing was a big deal.
Licking each other, you know.
It's licking each other.
It's just like a different life.
Yeah. It's so strange. Okay.
Let's keep the reminiscing for our final episode.
Right. For this one first aired May 11, 2009. Our writers, of course, Craig and Carter.
Yes. Just that's why it's
reeks
so beautiful.
Of them. Yeah, that's why it's so, we'll get there.
Yeah.
And our director is Pam Fryman.
Who else?
She's incredible. So we pick up pretty much right where we left off from Right Place, Right Time, where Ted has run into Stella on the street corner. And she's not alone. She's with Tony.
Yeah.
Yes, Tony. The Tony she left Ted for. And Ted plays it cool and tells him it was a nice surprise. And as he's telling, so we cut back to the bar and we find Ted telling this story to Marshall, Robin, and Barney. And Robin thinks that he blew it. But Marshall and Barney actually give him a standing ovation and are proud of him.
Yeah.
Because, and if you think about it, it really and truly was the best case scenario going from Ted in the bathtub with old clothes crying about and confessing this to Stella and Ted.
Which is basically what Marshall would have done.
Pretty much, yeah. To then, I guess the opposite side would be Barney and having the exact same looking girlfriend, but she, for whatever reason, she's French, so that makes her better. Yeah. And she's got bigger cans. And I love she sticks her hand out and says, Enchanté. And Tony takes it and gives it a kiss. And Sarah, white lip, chalk.
Listen, I said Stella's nude lip is offensive. It's honestly homophobic, and I hate it.
I was like, what the fuck is
Sarah,
that?
Sarah, chalky lip.
That's what I meant to say. I couldn't, what I didn't write it out. And happening? So.
This is an 09?
Yeah.
What was happening?
I don't know.
She looks like the dead.
It just is not, it's not a good look for her.
Is that powdery lip good for anybody?
Maybe she had some Hostess powder donuts in the back.
Craft services.
Yeah.
Just God leave damn it. It. Just leave it. It looks good.
It's part of the look.
It's part of the look. Oh, God, yeah. I'm glad we both caught that.
Ooh, yeah. but, yeah, so Barney, you know, actually points out that he thinks he played it so cool that Stella will reconsider her actions from 7 months ago. So we finally have a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a little bit shorter than this COVID experience for us. And...
Hmm.
Ted has been through it. Like, if you think about this past season, it's been a lot. And you know, Ted says, you know, he just wants to move on. But, you know, he is a human. And so his mind starts to wander. And we're in the middle of this dreamscape where Ted gets Stella to admit that he's a way better person than she is. And that they make a deal to have more sex and they're going to get back together. And Ted is interrupted by a knock at the door, which is fucking creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Stella. It's Tony.
It's Tony and his karate outfit, uniform.
Gi. And I don't know. Did we talk about Tony before?
Jason Jones?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. We could always talk about him again.
He's a Canadian actor, and he's married to Samantha Bee. Did you know that?
Yes, I did know that. I mean, hearing you say it, I did know that.
For, like, 20 years. Whoa. They've got 3 kids.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Those Canadians.
Yeah. He was most recently on a show on TBS called The Detour, and had really favorable reviews. Mm. Like, people really liked it.
Interesting, but it got canceled?
You know, I'm not sure. It said it was like till like 2019, I think. I don't know what happened. Gotcha. I don't know if it's maybe it was a limited run.
Hmm.
But all people right. really liked it.
Yeah, so in comes Jason Jones and as the painfully unself-aware Tony Graffinello, which we will see throughout this episode. And it turns out that he and Stella were actually making plans to move across the country. Specifically for him to be a screenwriter, put a pin in that. And, but then they bumped into Ted and it kind of threw everything off.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was all because they felt really bad for him. Specifically, Tony felt really, 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 really guilty about it. And I love Ted talking about his jovial nonchalance. Like, this whole time he's in such denial. I mean, he's been in denial about how he felt about what happened with Stella.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been really trying to keep that stiff upper lip no matter what has happened to him this year.
Push it down.
Just push it down, push it down. Very Ohio. But Tony won't take no for an answer. He really wants to make it right. And it turns out Tony's, like, loaded, like, super loaded. And we cut to the bar. And first of all, Ted's green sweater is amazing.
Mm.
Ted has never looked better.
Never looked better.
This is like hot Ted has entered the building. His skin looks great. His hair looks good. And that green is fire.
Perfect.
And remember, Stella's color is green. Green? Right? So
that's right. That's I remember interesting. Talking about that.
She came back around and so did the green. So Marshall's excited at the bar because he thinks Ted is going to get a big fat check from Tony. We get a litany of stupid fat jokes. No comment on those. Oh, and this is probably where there's someone reached out to me or the podcast this week and was talking about how we actually don't like the show at all because we, you know, criticize it. And listen, we're going to call out shit that doesn't hold up in 2020.
And like fat jokes.
Like fat jokes. And we have the blessing of the creators to do so. So suck on that. Anyway, turns out there was no check of any waiter size, but it was a job. And Tony offers him a job as a professor at Columbia, which is like unheard of in the real world because you need like a PhD in publications and all this other stuff. So like Tony must be donating like an entire fucking building in order to get Ted to be a professor of architecture. But anyway, we'll allow for that.
Because it's not like he's an English major. He's architecture. That's like super specific.
Yes.
So right. Are they looking for, like, and he says design your own curriculum. So they donate so much money, they get to create a new class.
An entire new class, that's like, that's ignorant money. That's like wild. That's like Lori Loughlin, Harvard money. So it's not what Ted wants. He doesn't want to be a professor. And so this is where we start to see a new path open for Ted, but he's refusing to go down it because he really wants to be an architect. He sees being a professor as settling, basically, for, you know how they say, like, if you can't teach, or those who can do, those who can't teach, which is shitty. And so that's basically Ted's like snobby opinion about architecture professors. But I mean, architecture professors are the ones that probably made him fall in love with architecture. And he could be doing that for the young minds. And like, it's Ted. He would love to be.
He bet Barney, like, if he lost, he would have to listen to him talk about architecture for 6 hours.
That's right. That's right. So
that's
like,
for fun.
For fun. So it's... to all of us, it seems obvious that this would be a perfect path for Ted. But to Ted, it's giving up on his dream. And this reminds...
But designing a rib restaurant in the shape of a hat.
Right. Well, that's to him paying your dues, right?
Yeah.
And I understand this because I was in the same situation, but it was... I was trying to be a professor... And everything in my life was telling me not to be.
No.
And I was taking shitty jobs that didn't pay well, that I had to do after my day job just to like get some credentials to be a professor. But I was not going to be able to do it unless I got a PhD. And even then it wasn't a sure thing.
Teaching sucks.
Yeah. And then I'd have to move to where the job was. Like it was this whole... as one of my professors called it, a screw job, basically. And it was only when I stopped banging my head against that wall that I found an entirely new profession.
And crushing it.
Thank you so much. So I felt the way he was about how it feels like you're giving up on your dream if you go in a different direction. But sometimes, guys, it's time to quit. But we'll talk more about that next episode.
Marshall's taking the job for money. He's not working for the NRDC, you know? Like sometimes your path shifts and changes.
Right. And sometimes you're just visiting more suffering upon yourself because of the time you've put in. But like, who cares? Who cares about how much time you've put in if you're fucking miserable?
That's where I'm at. Me and my friend Emma and I keep talking. We're like, it's such a disappointment. All the time and energy we've spent in this career, and it fucking sucks.
Right. But like, it's careers, relationships. It doesn't matter how much time you've put in. If you are not happy, it's probably not going to get better.
And some things just like run their course. And that's some, right. that's one thing my friend and I keep talking about. Like, it's run its course for us, and that's okay.
Right. It served its purpose, and it no yep. longer sparks joy.
Yeah. And there, its say. Purpose, it's done.
Right. So, So Ted's, you know, not letting Tony give him a job at Columbia like a fucking idiot. So anyway, Barney got a huge speeding ticket. So I guess he's come pretty far since learning to drive in the parking lot on the Fiero, because now he's speeding around New Jersey.
And I was wondering, $200 speeding tickets.
Right. And I was wondering if he was going upstate for like a conjugal visit with one of the girls in jail. But he apparently was on his way to a barbecue. But like, where, Barney? And for what?
And with who?
With who? Who knows? So they get into talking about, you know, talking your way out of a ticket. And, you know, this is a long thread that pays off at the end of the episode. And turns out Marshall talked his way out of a ticket in Minnesota by using the classic Midwest bait and switch of brats. You a brats man, Officer Jorgensen? I love
the way that episode is like framed or shot, you know, like it's Marshall's face, but it's the officer's like midsection. Yeah. And you see Marshall look down and he gets this smile and you think he just like saw his dick. But and no. like checked him out and he saw something and he knew exactly what he was going to do with it.
Mustard
on the holster.
I mean, thank God he was actually on his way to get some Belgian beer brined brats. Hey, alliteration, you know, because what nice, would he have yeah. done? And I love the line when he's like, follow me and lay on the horn. We're going to be running some reds.
Yep. So me good. Too. Have you ever, like, you going to this address?
Let's fucking go. Have you ever talked your way out of a ticket?
I mean, I've gotten like a warning.
That's talking your way out of a ticket.
But like,
did you cry?
No, no. Yeah. All right. We're on a one-way section. You know that one busy road in town that has a lot of fast food restaurants, yes. and then it goes to a one-way?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, I just had gotten my license.
Oh, God.
And I see a police officer behind me with the lights on, and I just keep driving because there's no way he's pulling me over.
Right.
And then I realize he is, and I pull over to the left side. Because I don't even know what's happening. I'm just like, what? And I think he just felt bad for me.
Oh my God. That's
I wasn't like going fast. You yeah, know, it's just yeah. like that one. It's just that when it goes to the one way and people just kind of like cruise through because it's yeah. no traffic.
Right.
And as that happens, as this happens, my ex-boyfriend Jamie drives by.
Oh my God. Were you in the bug?
Yeah.
Just can't miss it.
Can't miss it. Can't fucking I've miss it. I've always had like very distinct cars. Fucking the bug, Mandy Moore the orange driving car. Around. Oh my God. It's just like, And then another time I tried to lie and say I wasn't on my phone and the cop fucking got in my face and started screaming at me. And it was like, now you've lied to me and now you're going to get in trouble.
Holy shit.
It was scary.
Did you get a ticket?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
I talked, like, I don't know if I talked
my way out of it. I don't bother. I just don't even yeah, bother me neither. Trying.
But I mean, I only got a warning when I got pulled over for yelling with my microphone at a Trump rally. But the cop seemed kind of like scared because I was recording him the whole time. So, yeah. So we only got a warning for that. And then the other time I didn't talk my way out of it was I was driving down that really hilly road in our town. That leads to my house.
Yep.
And was just like jamming to La Vie Boheme from Rent.
As you do. Oh, yeah. That's a great
speeding song.
Yeah.
And I'm just hammering it down this road, probably 45 in a 25. And this fucking cop shoots out from like the one side street that I'm always paranoid there's going to be a cop on. And he was there. And he was such a dick to me. He was just such an asshole. So I knew I was... gonna yeah. get a full ticket, but yeah. Barney sees this as a challenge, the fact that Marshall has been able to talk his way out. So,
and I'm like, he accepts another challenge. Nobody challenges him too. I love that.
An excellent Barney runner. Oh. And yep. Accepted. Cute little play on the challenge accepted runner there.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, what? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Bless. He just seems like so simple.
Oh, Teddy boy.
Back at the apartment, Ted gets another knock at the door, and it is Tony again, back with another pitch, because he understands that Ted wants to design buildings and not teach. So a friend from private school, Richard Greenleaf, has a very lucrative offer for the architect who's willing to build his house. So Ted agrees to meet with him because it is a very large chunk of change.
There's the big fat check we were waiting for.
Yes. Yeah. Meanwhile, we cut to a speedometer that is showing some outrageously high speeds with Barney at the wheel revving the engine. And of course, he gets pulled over and suavely hands the officer a gift certificate for a custom tailored Italian suit. But it's not enough to get him out of the ticket because it was the wrong approach. Marshall had the right idea because he knew Officer Jorgensen was a brat's man.
Yeah.
He knew that. Barney just hands the guy willy-nilly a gift certificate.
That's just bribery, dude. That's just bribery.
That's just bribery. Like, you gotta play it smart, which is so interesting that, one, he didn't really think that talking yourself out of a ticket was a thing, and that, like, he would incorrectly size up his opponent, but...
Yeah, but I think he's still kind of new to driving, and he's kind of, like, stupid and naive in
he's
in
us when we were teenagers, yeah, and I got pulled over on the... and I went to the wrong side of the road. To the left.
Amazing. Amazing.
Cool. But Barney still ends up with a $375 ticket. And the police officer kept the certificate.
Yeah.
Because of course he did.
Yeah.
Robin points out, well, we all can see that Barney is very bad at this. Mm-hmm. And Barney very stupidly says something like, oh, please, like, you could do it. Which Marshall points out, Robin's a pretty girl. So, of course, she's talked her way out of it. And what does Robin say? She was like, that is offensive and...
She's like, that is outrageous. And factual.
And factual, yeah. And so we cut to Robin pulled over, and she's got, like, this very shiny, tear-stained face. Yeah. And the officer pulls up, and he, like, immediately just, like, sobs. He's like, oh, honey, it's okay, sweetie. It's all right. Just go slower next time. She's like, uh-huh. And the cop walks away. I love it. She, like, switches immediately. Yep. And she's like, thank you. She wipes the tears away.
Love it.
And so that story just really reinvigorates Barney. And off he goes. Just as Ted comes back to fill in the group about his business lunch with Tony.
Enter Richard Greenleaf, a.k.a. Amir Talai. So we see, you know, we get an image of this huge house, like this mansion on a hill. And I'm thinking, so is the murder house separate on the property? Is he tearing down this gigantic house to build a new gigantic house? It's hard to tell. But none of that matters, because what really matters is the laundry room. And they just do such a good job making this creepy. First of all, Amir's delivery is incredible. When I do laundry, it gets messy. Just the creepy way he says that.
He's like, and it's like nose scrunches. Yeah. Like, there's a delightful disgust.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, he like loves that they would get like the reaction that they're probably having internally. He's like, that excites him.
Right. And then there's like the slow push in of the camera. And Jason Jones, a.k.a. Tony, is just, like, chowing on this steak. And it keeps, like, cutting.
Single-minded.
Yeah, it keeps cutting back to the bar where everyone's like, no fucking way, no fucking way. Getting creeped out about, like, the steel chains and the stain-proof ceramic tile. And Ted just says, the steak is so rare.
Yeah, I lost it.
So good. And then
Tony keeps talking about how his instincts as a martial artist telling him like this is like right on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Off the hook. Like something's off the hook. And everyone's like, Ted, you can't design a murder house, which is such a
they're screaming, you can't build a murder house,
It's iconic Himyun moment. And what really tips it off is the bit about the soundproofing where Richard Greenleaf goes into the current laundry room and some sort of machine turns on, maybe like a chainsaw, a bone saw of some kind.
Oh, I just thought chainsaw. I never thought bone saw. I'm going to throw
it. You know,
up.
Like from the emergency room?
We have a hacksaw, and I can't even think about it without having it. I want you to like independently text Chris like right now and say like, what is Caitlin's reaction when we talk about a hacksaw? Because my neck hurts. Like I feel like someone's going to decapitate
me.
Dude,
maybe in a past life you got your head hacksawed off.
Probably. And I think I was brutally murdered.
Well, there you go. Well, I mean, that's pretty brutal, Caitlin.
Oh.
Or in addition to the hacksaw murder, there was another murder? Or did you do the hacksaw yourself?
You know, that makes so much sense and actually feels comforting to me.
To know that you were brutally murdered with a hacksaw?
Then that just makes sense. Like why I have those feelings.
Awesome. Well, before we go on to the next scene, it's a great time to share a piece of our interview with the amazingly creepy Amir Talai. And I'm so excited to share it with you. So enjoy. Get ready, friends, because today I am talking to the actor behind maybe the creepiest guest character in Himyun history. Besides playing Richard... Okay, definitely the creepiest. I don't know if there's anyone creepier than Mr. Richard Greenleaf, the owner of the Murder House. And besides that wonderful role that no one can forget, he's been in tons of TV shows and movies, both live action and animated. You've seen him recently as Detective Klein on Bosch and in Marriage Story. He's also been in American Horror Story, Legally Blonde 2, Harold and Kumar, Escape from Guantanamo Bay, and Gilmore Girls, just to name a few. Amir Talai, welcome to Hey Beautiful. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, I was so excited when I got a email that the subject was Hey Beautiful, because I was like, oh, well, hello there. And then I found out it was just the name of the podcast.
Hey, you know what? It does double duty, especially for you.
Oh, great. Like it.
Yeah, that's actually the name of the How I Met Your Mother theme song, which very few people know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so it's like a deep cut. You know?
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. What if?
That sucks. Okay, off to a great start. Off to a great start. So let's get into these questions. I mean, I guess first I'd like to talk about how we connected with each other, because one day I found that you were following me.
Yes. How about that? I was like, hey, this is a professional troll of Trumpsters. I want to be closer to her orbit. So that was it. I was like, yep, here, take a follow.
You stay working, Amir. You've been, I mean, your history is expansive in both live action and voice. And it seems to be like that's a real feat for someone in Hollywood, even if they're as talented as you are. So like, what is your secret? Like what, besides the obvious chops and your range, I mean, what, how do you stay so booked?
You know how like some people say like, I don't know the meaning of the word no. It's kind of like that, except that I don't say no to anything.
Yep, sign me up. That's amazing.
So when I get a call, I'm like, sure, why not? And you know, honestly, that might have hurt me in some occasions, but I'm a workaholic, and I'm also I'll go ahead and pat myself on the back a little bit. I'm a really good auditioner. A really good auditioner. I understand what needs to happen in an audition. I take it seriously. Yeah. And I have a sense of like, I think it's really important to understand a sense of style, and to know what you're auditioning for. A lot of the roles I get are sort of those like ethnically ambiguous roles, right? Where they're trying to sprinkle in a little bit of color. and but not too much color, right?
right.
So you know, I happen to fit that, right? I happen to be a light skinned brown guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of the stuff early on that I was getting, a lot of the comedic Middle Eastern stuff that I was getting, was that I really understood like Middle Eastern culture and American culture. And so I understood when they were going for a joke, how to bridge those two, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. What's interesting is my next question was actually getting pigeonholed in Hollywood because the last interview I did, it was with Gloria Calderon Kellett, who was a writer on How I Met Your Mother. And now she runs One Day at a Time. And she was talking about how as a Latina, she was always typecast as a prostitute or a maid. And I was going to ask if you'd had similar experience of being pigeonholed and if that's gotten better at all, or if you still see the same kind of roles coming through.
Well, it's interesting. I would say anytime I have played a character that was Middle Eastern, it was some kind of stereotype or something. But I've also played a lot of characters that are not Middle Eastern, right? Like Richard Greenleaf.
Yeah.
Right? That was written, you know, very, very obvious Anglo name. Right.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And then they cast this light skinned brown guy, and they were like, well, let's just leave the name the same, right? Yeah. So I would call that character a white character, right? Even though it's played by a Persian guy, the character is white, right? The name is Richard Greenleaf. He has this huge mansion in you know, wherever the heck Himyam takes place, you know, or outside of, what is it, New York?
Yeah. He's a serial killer.
Right, but it's like outside New York somewhere, right? So that's a white guy, right?
Yeah.
But as far as Middle Eastern roles, that's not getting better, actually. Like if the role is Middle Eastern, if the character has a name like Amir as opposed to Richard, then it is almost certain that that character has something to do with terrorism or something. It's like this, you know, we've done the research and it's like 80% of the time, which is a fucking huge bummer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a huge, huge bummer. And it's no wonder that almost half the country, when they hear about a guy named Amir, that they assume he has something to do with terrorism.
Right. I think people ignore how much art influences opinions and perceptions. So
absolutely.
I'm glad that we're talking about that. Cause I didn't know that the number was that high. I think I had assumed that it was pretty bad, but that's real bad. That's real bad.
You know, I think it was the Washington Post I might've read it in, but 75% of white Americans don't know any brown people, like personally.
Oh yeah, I think I've seen that. I saw that Washington Post. That's insane.
So if that's the case, the only time you see a Middle Eastern person is on TV.
Yep.
And if all you're seeing is terrorists, I mean, I almost don't blame you for being I have literally never seen a Middle Eastern person not be a terrorist, right? If that's your experience, well, fuck.
Yeah. Jesus. I don't know how we fix that, Amir. You've got all day, so let's work on it.
It's tough. We have to fix we have to fix Hollywood. Hollywood is almost entirely white run.
Yeah.
And even when they're liberals, they still don't get it, which is why we have to get brown people in positions of power in Hollywood.
Amen. Yeah, because they just don't think about it and they don't realize they're not thinking about it.
Right.
Or maybe they do. But for the most part, it's the need for more seats at the table for sure.
Yeah. And you know, it helps, you know, there have been times like when I did Marriage Story, my character name was Greg and I was like, hey, can we make this Persian? And, and Noah Baumbach was like, yeah, how about we just call the character Amir? And I'm like, fuck yeah. Great.
Awesome. That's
and so
great.
I think it's important to do stuff like that when brown people like me get cast as a Richard or a Greg to try and get that changed. Now we'll get into the Richard situation in a moment once we start actually talking about Himyam. But
yeah, yeah. Totally.
Wait, thanks. Before we get into my actual experience with Himyam, you just reminded me I had a previous experience with Himyam that is so great. My first date with my wife, we went to the Dresden in Hollywood, which you may remember from the movie Swingers, where like Marty and Elaine, that old couple, are playing music.
Yeah.
Right. So we went there and Marty and Elaine were playing, and at the table next to us was Jason Segel. This was like Himyam was like finishing its first season, right? Yeah. And so I was sort of vaguely aware of the show and of him, but it certainly wasn't like a hit or anything like that, right?
Right.
And
right,
so he was there with two young ladies, and then we were kind of almost sharing a table with him because of the way that the place is set up. We just sort of struck up a conversation. We're like, "Yeah, it's our first date, this and that." And he was so kind. He was really nice. He was like, "Oh wow, it's your first date, very cool." And then at the end of the night when we're leaving, he's like, "Good luck, you two." And I'm like, "Hey, man, great to meet you. Good luck with that. Good luck with the show, man. Like, I hope it does well for you. You know,
wow.
Good luck on, good on luck how I met your show. Mother."
Wow. And that was how you met your wife. Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Full circle. That's so cool.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. So I know it was over a decade ago, but we have to talk about How I Met Your Mother. So no worries if things are fuzzy, but first of all, bravo, because the creep factor on Richard Greenleaf is through the roof.
Thank you.
And that was that's a character that I love. It's an episode I love, and your role in it is just chef's kiss. just so fun to watch. So how did you come to get the role of Richard Greenleaf?
So it's funny. This story actually isn't that fuzzy because I tell it often because a lot happened that day.
Ooh.
So I auditioned for it maybe like a week before the shoot day. And then two or three days later, they were like, "They loved you. I forget, you know, whenever you're sort of in the mix for something, a lot of times they'll tell you like the producers love you, but the director isn't sure, or the director loves you and the producers are thinking about casting a friend. Like I forget who it was that was like on my side or whatever.
Yeah.
But someone loved me and someone else, felt like maybe they could get like some A-list star to play that role instead.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, all right, I get it. That's cool. And then the shoot day was approaching and I was like, "Hey, am I still in the mix?" And like, yeah, at this point, they're really having trouble finding a star. But so it looks like it's hopefully going to be you, but they're still trying to get a star. I'm like, all right, okay, fine, cool. I'll hold the day. So as it happened, the shoot day was April 1st, April Fool's Day. And my wife and I were moving in together on that day, right? Taking all the stuff from my apartment, then over to hers, and then over to our new apartment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plus we had our dog with us, right?
Yeah.
Who gets very stressed out when we move, or like go to a hotel or something like that.
He always
got very stressed. So, it's the last day of March. Wait, does March have
31?
So it's March 31st. March 31st. Haven't heard anything. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I didn't get it. There it is. So we're moving on April 1st. We're in the moving truck. We get my stuff over to her place. And as soon as we get to her place, they go, "Hey, how soon can you be on set?"
Oh my God.
I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
What the hell? I'm
super excited, but also like stressed to the max because I'm about to abandon my wife and the movers and my dog.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but it's a no-brainer, right? They're not, it, there's no like, are you sure you still want to do it, right? They're like, yeah. So you're doing it, right? So, and I'm like, you know, 90 minutes, an hour?
Yeah.
And they're like, that'll do. Get there as soon as you can. I'm like, fuck, oh okay.
So had you memorized the lines?
No, of course. I've had no time. Of course, I haven't prepared. I haven't spent any time working on lines that I don't think I'm going to do. Right. So I leave. Turns out that the moment I left, my dog, stressed to the absolute max, had an epileptic seizure.
Oh my God.
Which is, if you've never had an epileptic dog before, very messy, not fun.
Oh no.
My wife, basically, you know, fell apart in tears. Didn't tell me about any of this until after I wrapped though. Right. Like she wanted me to be able to like have a good day shooting. But it was insane. And the thing is, to this day, she does not let me forget. Like the extent to which I abandoned her. And I'm like, look, wow. I didn't tell Himyim to call me. Like I wish they would have told me sooner. Okay.
Yeah.
We actually had a little fight about that day this morning in bed because we're moving again soon. And she's like, you better not pull another Himyim on me. And I'm like, look, I am not planning on it. But if I book a fucking movie with Laura Dern on the day we're moving, I might have to go.
Listen, Amir Talai says no to nothing, okay?
Damn right.
Oh my God. Work. Well, you know what this says to me? It says that How I Met Your Mother, fan or not, has been such a huge part of your marriage.
Yeah, it really has. It comes up regularly.
Wow. Well, shout out to your wife. May she keep cashing that check for as long as she can, because that sounds like a nightmare of a day.
What I should do is, anytime I get a residual check for How I Met Your Mother, I should show it to her and be like, look, we're still getting paid, okay?
Yeah.
Or maybe that would make things worse if I did that.
No, I would just, let's go, let's not add anything to the mix at this point. Yeah. So besides everything leading up to being on the set, do you remember what it was like to be there? I mean, it must have been frantic because you were like thrown into this. I mean, how did they even have a costume or anything?
Yeah. I mean, they had gotten my sides, my sizes, like a few days prior, like just in case. I got there. I probably wore my own pants because I'm just like sitting at the table the whole time.
Yeah.
And I just watched it again last night. You know, it's a very sort of like loose fitting sweater situation. It's, you know, it's very general. It's not like I wore like a tailored suit, you know? So they just pulled some shit out of stock and threw it on me. And they're like, okay, how soon can you have this memorized? And I'm like, look, I don't know. So you just tell me when you need me and we'll make the best of it.
So we get
there and what ended up happening was, and I don't know if you remember the scene, but the scene is happening, but it keeps getting intercut with the gang at the cafe talking about the scene, right?
Yes.
So we don't actually have to shoot it as one straight scene. So what ends up happening is they're feeding me the lines off camera, right? Yeah. And I'm just, and then I just say them. So I'm just like, eyes on Josh Radnor, right? Yeah. And then they're like, now say this, Amir. And then I go, now say this, Amir. You know what I mean? I just literally repeating after them all the while, like trying to stay in character, right? Like this is actually a character that I was really, really excited to play because it kind of reminded me of Michael Emerson. Do you know who that is?
No.
He played Benjamin Linus, aka Henry Gale, in Lost.
Oh, okay.
Did you watch that show?
The beginning of it, yeah.
Oh, you gotta watch all of it. It's so good. He also played. He also played like a serial killer on The Practice, Dylan McDermott connection.
Perfect.
And I love him so much. And so I'm basically just doing a Michael Emerson impression as Richard Greenleaf.
Perfect.
So trying to stay in character. Also, Jason Jones just decided he's gonna go ham on this steak that he's eating.
Steak, yes.
And he is cracking himself and Josh Radnor up so much.
Oh,
it is, it's an I mean, it's a blast, but it's also a shit show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then meanwhile, Pam Fryman is just like feeding me lines. I'm trying not to laugh, trying to do my Michael Emerson impression. And then I just do the line and then we just move on to the next line. And I think I was on that set for less than 90 minutes. Tops.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. Where can people find you on the internet? Because you're great there too.
I honestly am trying to be on social less. Mm-hmm. My wife has taken my Facebook and Twitter passwords from me. Although I feel like I built up a Twitter following and now I feel like I've abandoned them. and now I'm more on like Insta just cause it feels a little bit nicer.
It is. Than Twitter. Oh my God. And Facebook, forget it.
So I spend more time on Insta. And all of my socials are just Amir Talai, AmirTalai. And then, I don't think I have anything coming up since I haven't shot anything and God knows.
Right, right. What with the virus? God.
Yeah.
Well, nope. Thank you so much. And it's been great getting to know you today.
This has been so fun. I'm so glad you reached out.
Thank you so much, Amir. That was incredible. And like I said, the interview is like 45 minutes long. So if you want to hear the rest of it, patreon.com/heybeautifulpod. It's only $2 a month and you'll get all of our full length interviews that we've had. So head on over there. And thanks again to Amir. It was so great having you on.
So meanwhile, Barney gets pulled over again. And this time he's got a story instead of a bribe. Officer, please, my wife's at the hospital. Her water broke. But the officer notices that she's not in the car. And this made me so mad because all Barney had to do was, and he could have given a great story like, she was at her sister's house and we didn't expect the baby for, you know, 6 more weeks. Please, officer, like, I have to go. Like, that's
totally,
all he had to do.
Totally choked.
Totally choked. Instead, he says something, a typical Barney response about the leather seats.
Right.
And so the officer's like, and just hands him, you know, gives him the ticket. So no surprise
and
there.
And here's the thing. He's used to lying, but he's used to lying to very dumb girls. So maybe he's not that good of a liar.
That makes so much sense. Because, I mean, like, because the group, the friends, never believe his shit either.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, some of it. But
yeah.
But truly, he really, he's never had to work very hard to have a lie believed.
No. Interesting. Mm. Very good point.
Thanks.
Back at McLaren's, Tony is apologizing to Ted about the murder house and has a new pitch for Ted. He's going to build the Statue of Liberty a husband. So really, what kind of pull does his family have?
He's got some suction down at City Hall, and I love that phrase.
Holy shit. Which, I mean, like, think about it. Like, people usually say, I've got some pull. Like, suction, that's like...
Right? I love that. I love that phrase.
That's a good one. You know, but Ted's had enough, and he tells Tony that I don't want anything to do with Stella. She lied to me and left me, you know, at the altar. Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of person does that? I'm better off without her. She's all yours.
And that gets him thinking.
Because, I mean, like, he says this to the person she left him for. So, so, you know, that's the end of that, or so we think, until Ted gets another knock at the door. But instead of Tony, it is a tearful Stella.
So it's like his fantasy come to life, sort of.
Yep. And she says, Tony broke up with me. And like, what a fucking season this has been for Ted. Like, if you think about it, like, we start off and they're together and in love, and Ted wants to get married, and then she leaves him, and he goes through it for a time, and we see him doing good, and then
all of a sudden she's back in his apartment.
Yeah.
Single again.
Single again, tearful at his door. And Stella explains that it was something because of what Ted said to him. And Robin's on the couch, and she's like, oh, hold on. You made Tony break up with Stella. She's like, I'm sorry, but I need to insist that you bump this. And she holds her fist up, and Ted and Stella go out, and she says something like, I'll be waiting.
Yeah, I'll be waiting. Just sit there.
I love how like his friends do have no fucks to give in front of Stella.
It's so cathartic, honestly. Because he's still trying to be pretty classy about it, but
they're all like, fuck you, you're trash.
Yeah, they're being dicks, and I love it so much.
I think I see a lot of myself in them.
Same. In this. Absolutely, yeah. Same.
Yeah. So she goes out in the hall with Ted, and Stella gives him the explanation that she really owed him months and months and months ago. Mm-hmm. And we get this whole backstory that made things... It made me see things differently. You know, yeah. We find out she's been in love with Tony since high school, and then she got pregnant, and the stress of it was all too much for, you know, two 19-year-olds. And so they broke up.
Yeah.
And for a while, Stella just really focused on being a mom to Lucy, and that was enough. And I think, you know, like she says, she met Ted, and that makes her realize what she'd been missing. And she really cared for Ted. I don't disbelieve her. Yeah. And it was almost enough. It was almost enough. But it wasn't the same. It wasn't what she had with Tony.
Right. And I've been there. I mean, when I got divorced, I mean, there were people that sort of reminded me what it was supposed to feel like. But, you know, the full triangle wasn't there. There were pieces of it. And so it was fun, and it was necessary. But sometimes it's just not the right one.
Right.
No one's to blame. I mean, what she did was terrible, but you can't fake that stuff.
No, and I think, you know, and she says this later on about, you know, Ted asked her what it is about him, but I think, and I've read this or heard this somewhere, like there's people in this world and in this lifetime that you could be happy with.
Yeah.
And you could live enough. Like your life happy enough. Mm-hmm. But that's not what Stella wants. That's not what Ted wants. And I think, you know, it was really the right thing to do here for her.
Yeah.
You know, Ted is angry, and I don't blame him, and starts to turn and walk away. And a very desperate Stella asks him to talk to Tony. Like.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, Ted would be inhuman if he didn't snap. And it's really good to see it.
Yes, because like you said, he's been trying to play it so cool and not be like super sobbing, like crying all the time, and just really pathetic and whatnot. And he tells her that she doesn't get to play that emotional card. Like, she can't pull on those heartstrings or not attached to anything.
I love that line.
Yeah. So he's so good. Josh Radnor's so good at like playing the douchey Ted, like this. Really like passionate side of Ted too. I really love. He's great.
I know.
Did you hear that person who thinks we don't even fucking like this show?
Or specifically don't like Ted. It's like, Ted's fucking annoying in season one. That's how I do. I'm like, this dude, whoever he is, has only listened to like the first season. Because yes, Ted was annoying and clingy and stalky. And he's grown up, and now he's hot. And
he was in his 20s. Now he's in his 30s. Yeah,
he's telling Stella off. And I mean, but it also shows how desperate Stella was here to ask him that.
Yeah.
Because she's not an idiot. I mean, she's not a bad person. So she's desperate to get the love of her life back.
Clearly does not know what else to do.
Right. So back to the B plot of Barney getting pulled over. This time it's the officer happens to be a woman. And then we get this fantasy tale of what happened when she pulled him over that Barney relays to Robin and Marshall. But luckily, we get the real story because Ted's the one who had to bail him out. So we flash over to Ted and Stella in the hallway again. And Ted's phone rings and it's Let's Go to the Mall. His ringer is Let's Go to the Mall, which is amazing.
It made me long for the days when people didn't just have their phone on Do Not Disturb or silent.
I know.
And like you had a fun ringtone and then that kind of went away and then it was the call. Yeah. I was going to say call back, the ring back. I still have, I sometimes have to call parents and I have parents who still have ring back tones. I'm like, you're paying money for that. Yeah,
right. Like still. Like still, monthly.
Like it's 2020.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So yeah, we hear Ted's amazing ringtone and it turns out Barney is in a jail cell in New Jersey. And we
with
see
some street tough.
Yeah, we see what really happened. And the best part of it is Barney screaming at the gun is so funny and very different from him, you know, being ripped out of the car and ravaged by ravished by the cop. So Ted needs a ride to New Jersey. And, you know, that's where Stella's from. So she's desperate to help him. And or just to apologize in any way for what happened. She wants to make it up to him. So she offers to drive him out there. And they get there. They bring him back. And Barney. Here's where Barney is super petty and it's amazing. He's like, hey, how's your super hot French chick that you're dating? She's the hottest girl you've ever been with. Bye, Stella.
Ever.
So good.
And he's like, bye, Stella. Bye, Stella. Or see you, Stella. And yeah. Like head on and like heads out.
Yeah, it's so good. And, you know, she apologizes. I mean, this is like the first apology. Before she was kind of explaining what happened, but now she's, you know, they've spent more time together and she's apologizing. And, you know, by now Ted is broken down and he says he'll talk to Tony for her because breaking news, you cannot cut Ted's heartstrings. They are made of industrial strength steel. Like whatever he goes through, he's still going to be a big bleeding heart, and we love him for that.
Yeah.
And speaking of hearts, this beautiful song Swells Up, which is one of my favorites from the show, Be Careful With My Heart by Michelle Featherstone. I mean, just put it on and it'll put you like right in this scene. And so we get a cut and Ted talks to Tony, who of course took her back. And then the very next day, they flew off to California to start.
That's how you know they're rich because they can just do that.
Oh, there's so much about them that's rich. and then we find out that Tony actually sold a screenplay called The Wedding Bride. And I mean, based on the image, you can kind of guess what it might be about. Mm-hmm. But let's put a pin in that because, of course, that's not going to be the last we hear of the Wedding
Bride.
And
this is a spoiler-free podcast.
So here's where we get Ted being real for the first time in 7 months, basically. Mm-hmm. You can really feel his loneliness here and his frustration with how his life's gone. And he says, okay, I'm going to say something out loud that I've been doing a pretty good job not saying out loud lately. What you and Tony have, what I thought for a second you and I had, what I know that Marshall and Lily have. Oh, I love that. I know.
Yeah.
I want that. I do. And then you realize he's watching them every single day. And, like, he wants it so bad. And he was supposed to be on, like, the same track as they were. And he's so far behind them now. It's just so sad. Oh. I know.
Kate.
I know. I'm sorry.
You're getting, like, emotional.
I know. And he says, I keep waiting for it to happen and waiting for it to happen. And I'm just tired of waiting. And we get Stella's, you know, old speeding ticket joke. You know, I got there here as fast as I could. And she says, and I mean, she's in a place where she has, it's taken her a long time to get back to the love of her life too.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, you know, I know you're tired of waiting and you might have to wait a little while more, but she's on her way, Ted. She's on her way. And she's getting here as fast as she can, which is a reminder that the universe is in charge. you know? And people are just going through their lives not knowing when their life's going to change forever, mm-hmm. you know, and what path is going to have them intersect with somebody else. And it reminds me of the new Taylor Swift song, Invisible String. If you haven't listened to it, I guarantee that that song would have been on this show because it's about just.
Oh, for sure.
All through everything. Have you heard it?
Yeah.
It's like all about how all through everything, all the ups and downs in your life, this one thread of gold was tying you to the other person you're supposed to be with. And it's just so sweet. And I remember feeling the way Ted felt at the age Ted was at, you know, I was almost 30 when I met Liz. And so when I was, you know, freshly divorced and, you know, stumbling through my life, I remember being like, it's never going to happen. I'm so tired of trying and waiting and, you know, finding all these people that are not the right thing.
Yeah.
And this episode is what made me feel better. Because it's like, I can't know. I can't see the whole puzzle. You know, it's pieces of it are out of control. And whoever it is, she's coming and she's coming as fast as she can. You know? Ugh. So I am so grateful for this episode because truly I've watched it probably more than most of the other episodes just because it made me feel so much better every time I watched it. So
as soon as Stella starts the joke, I get such goosebumps.
I know. So this is a real gift from Carter and Craig. So thank you. If they've listened and they've made it this far, this episode is really what kept me hoping that there was somebody on their way for me, you know?
Yeah.
Even when I was so sad and alone, I was just like, someone's coming. And also I am someone and I'm coming as fast as I can for that person, you know? So yep. it was just nice. And then we see Ted left on the stoop where so much has happened.
I wrote something about those stoops. Ugh.
That's right.
Like it just.
Yeah.
Highs and lows.
Oof, with his yellow umbrella.
Yeah.
Yeah. Want to do this little bit after the black?
I guess. It just feels wrong to even like say anything.
I know.
After that.
I was like, there doesn't even need to be an after the black moment, but it is a good one because. Something has been missing.
Yeah, but it could have waited until next episode.
Well, next episode, beginning. She's in the whole episode.
I know. But they could have done a little before something quick.
Quick. I know.
That's what I tell my kids. Like, come on, quick.
Quick
practice. All right. Okay. So, yeah, we get the extra credit, black screen, whatever you want to call it. We have Lily, who comes back to the bar. And she admits that the joke was sort of funny when she had remembered it and that she may have overreacted. And she quickly points out that those are Marshall's words, not hers, which I fucking love because that is exactly something I would do if I were like made to feel like I needed to not apologize, right. but say I have overreacted because of Chris. I would definitely say that it wasn't me, that I did not willingly say those words. I'd want everyone to know.
Right.
And so, but then she asks Barney what he's been up to and realizes that it is just all too much right now. And then she's got to really ease back into it because Barney's breaking into amnesia wings of like hospitals with pictures of kids in a ring. And he's trying to find the hottest one there.
Oh my God.
Oh, Barney.
Classic.
Barney.
But at least we know Lily's alive, right?
Thank God. Yeah. And you know, you're right. It has been a while. It was so good to see her again.
Yeah. And yeah. I would have loved to have seen her reaction to Stella being around, you know, because I'm sure she would have had some wonderful words for her.
How about it?
Yeah.
You son of a bitch.
So what'd you think of As Fast As She Can?
Well, I watched it so many times just because it's so good. And I was just like, oh, I guess I gotta take notes this time. And then I just sit there and Chris is like, are you going to take notes? I'm like, I'm just watching it. I want to get familiar.
It's so good. It's so good.
And I love the way, like, you think the speeding ticket thing is just going to be some stupid little B-plot side joke. And then Stella brings it all together. with that old joke.
And I wonder if the whole episode started with that joke.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So perfect.
I could see that. That makes sense.
So perfect.
It's just so good.
Bravo, boys and Pam.
Well done.
Well done.
All right. Oof. You ready to get into these 21?
All right. I mean, it's a gauntlet. And just so you guys know, if you are not a patron, I did cut down your piece to just your legendary moment. There were some wonderful emails. Thank you so much. I did read them. But, you know, cut for time. Our patrons,
especially when there's 21.
I know. Our patrons do get their emails read in their entirety, though. And there's plenty of those. So let's go.
All right. First up is Susan. Susan, it's a legendary moment. It's Ted and Stella's talk in the car. Stella telling Ted that the person he's waiting for is on her way, and she's getting there as fast as she can.
It's a popular one tonight. Thank you so much, Susan. Next up is David, who's one of our patrons. Not really my favorite episode, because it's one that really got my hopes up, only for a lot of the mystery it promises in the hook to not be answered for many more seasons. Very true. And the scene where Stella asks Ted to get Tony to get back together with her is just so cringy to me. First, Legmo is definitely for the murder house, easily the funniest part of the episode. Second, Legmo is for Barney being a bro and talking up Claudette while in the car with Ted and Stella. I love Barney being an actual good bro to Ted. And micro Legmo is let's go to the mall at being Ted's ringtone. Good ones, David.
Claire is another patron who writes, "Hey, beautifuls, thanks for the great podcast, which I devoured since I discovered it in June and now must impatiently wait for the new episodes with everyone else." God bless you.
Yeah, right? That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. This is my first legendary moment email, so I'm going to be sneaky and give you a couple. Well, you're a patron, so you are allowed to That's do right. that, Claire. My first legmo is because it's so funny, the murder house. A, the dinner scene was hilarious, and B, I love when the main cast talk over each other like they do with, "You can't build a murder house." My second is because it breaks me a little when Ted tells Stella she can't pull those strings anymore because they're no longer attached to anything.
It's a good thing he's lying.
I know, right? Maybe that's why he's a bleeding heart, because it just cuts his little heartstrings a little bit.
Oh, don't say that.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Ted.
Little paper cuts on his little heart. Keep going.
Okay. Sorry for the long email, but I have to give an honorable mention to Michelle Featherstone's gorgeous song, "Careful With My Heart."
Yes!
Cheers from Australia, and I'm so happy for you about the election results over there. Best, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.
I think the whole world is, for real.
And now Biden has won like 90 different times. It's just so delicious.
Good every time. It is so good every time.
Next up is Anna, and Anna says, Ted finally getting out his anger for Stella. Good one.
Yes, let it out.
Amen.
Helena?
Yeah.
Helena, didn't want to fuck that up because we cleared it up.
That's right.
Another patron. "Hey, ladies, I forgot there were two more episodes in season 4, which is wild because I love this episode. My legendary moment is an obvious one, but Stella's, 'She's on her way, Ted, and she's coming as fast as she can.' I first watched this at 15, 16, and it just stuck with me all these years. Like a lot of people, I've been through it at some points in my life. And like Kate said in the live stream, the idea that you're meant to be with someone along with the overarching theme of the show that a greater plan is always in motion is just so refreshing and is great to hold on to in tonight's times. Sorry this was so long. Thank you, ladies, for all that you do."
It's probably supposed to be in tough times, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. You know what? My brain is fried. I could not even. I'm like, sure.
In tough times.
The kids. Yeah. She was 15, 16 when this came out. She's a baby.
She's a babe. Little babe. Next up is Emma, and I saw Emma talking about this on Twitter, too, but her legendary moment is basically that Tony and Stella are a power couple, because Stella was 19 when she had Lucy, who's 8 years old. She's only 27. She has a 3-story house in New Jersey and is a reputable dermatologist, and then she included some spoilery stuff about Tony. I mean, we do know that he becomes a screenwriter, at least, and she said, "What a power couple."
So,
true story.
How long has she even been practicing as a dermatologist?
Can't be long.
Like, because you have to go to med school for...
Do you have to go to full med school to be a dermatologist?
We don't have time for this. All right, research. We don't have time.
Someone will tell us.
Who is it that usually, is it Emma that usually corrects us? Who was it?
Emma is definitely somebody who is very knowledgeable about things and lets us know.
Yeah.
So someone let us know how long it takes.
My favorite. To become... No wonder we can't remember your name. We block it out every time.
So someone can, someone let us know how long it takes to become a dermatologist so we can do the math. Yeah.
And build a reputable practice in Manhattan.
Do the maths, as they say on Love Island.
I love maths, the plural. The
way they and I love it with an F, maths.
Oh.
Dude.
So good.
Get sucked in.
All right. Our next, it is winter time. This is when we do watch shows. So
it's we'll maths see. And I love it. Continue.
All right. Tish, one of our patrons, writes, hey, K&K, I love that Ted's ringtone is Let's Go to the Mall. Question, whose car is Barney driving and what happened to it? Did it get impounded? Like, I need answers.
So true. 15 moving so violations in 3 days.
It's no. He should have probably gotten arrested like 5 moving violations ago.
That car is at the police auction.
For sure.
It's like a fucking zip car. They impounded it. Do they even have zip cars then? We don't need to look it up.
I'm not looking up. If you guys, I told Kate we have to finish by 9 because I go to bed usually like 8.
It's gonna happen.
8:30 and 9 because I get up at 4:45. It sucks.
It's gonna happen. All
right. If you would have asked me what my legendary moment was like 8 months ago, I would have said the yellow umbrella for its place in the story. But after rewatching this and realizing my life isn't really where I thought it would be, I think my legendary moment has to go to Stella's speech saying she's coming as fast as she can and wait just a little bit longer. I actually cried.
Yeah.
Honestly, these last 3 episodes have hit differently on this rewatch. Isn't that amazing how the show, it does hit you differently at different points in your life?
Yeah.
Like we said, the older you get, the more
you appreciate different parts of it and
Hate
different parts of it.
Yeah.
Next up is another patron, Jeff. Hi, K&K. I hope you both had a good Thanksgiving and are doing well. My legmo for this episode has to be Ted's ringtone, being Let's Go to the Mall. It's such a simple thing that isn't acknowledged in the episode, but it cracks me up every time. It's the perfect in-joke because it's exactly the sort of thing the gang would do to Robin. Best, Jeff. Perfect. Yeah. Carter and Craig are the kings of callbacks. So
they really are.
Nice.
That's one of the things I love about the show. I love all those callbacks.
So good.
I don't know why my voice sounds like that now. Actually, I do because it's during the school year and it's late.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Next is
We're halfway through.
Oh my God.
Halfway through.
Edwin, another one of our patrons. I almost did that in a British accent. I am sorry. Hey, beautiful ladies. My legendary moment for as fast as she can is definitely Ted's ability to be the bigger person. Reminds me of myself in a way on how I like to do things. Honorable mention, Barney's scream when the cops says, get out of the car. Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
P.S. Signed up for Patreon. Not the best tier, but that will definitely change in the future. And thank you so much for such an amazing podcast. Much love, Edwin.
Thank you, Edwin.
I did like almost like a Ted Mosby. Like
the heart chest grab. She did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Dude, we're just so thrilled that you would even support us. Yeah.
If that's what your tier is, I don't remember. But $2 is fine for anybody.
It's the truth.
It's the truth, love.
Bruv.
It's the truth, bruv. Mate. Let's crack on.
Getting punchy.
I know, me too. I'm absolutely buzzing. Okay. The next one is from Allison. And Allison says, her legendary moment is Marshall's reaction to the murder house with a close second being Barney's scream when the gun is pointed at his face. Good ones.
Chris writes, my legmo is exactly what Stella says to Ted. Mm. She's coming as fast as she can. Also wrote a very touching email about finding his person.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you so much for that, Chris. Just like me. Like, we had a very similar experience of this episode sort of being a great comfort while we were waiting for our people to arrive as fast as they could. Next up is Matthew, one of our patrons. Hi, K&K. Honestly, I don't like As Fast As She Can very much. Wow.
Okay.
All right. Barney's plot about trying to get out of a speeding ticket does nothing for me. But once again, I don't like seeing Stella back. I hate seeing Tony back. I don't like being reminded that the wedding bride is still to come. And most of all, I hate that Tony and Stella's relationship, abrupt breakup, and reunion via emotional manipulation of Ted takes up so much of the episode's focus. I feel like the only reason the episode exists is to come up to set up for Ted potentially becoming a professor. Frankly, most of this episode is more like an anti-legendary moment for me. Wow. I do a retraction five, but I wouldn't even give this episode a high two, much less a high five. Hot, the takes are hot tonight.
Yes.
Therefore, the small legendary moment I can think of is Marshall's story about using a bratwurst to get out of a speeding ticket. It feels like such a Midwestern, aw, shucksy doodles thing to do that it captures Marshall's pure essence nicely, especially because he was manipulating an officer of the law with his sausage. As always, thank you for everything you do. The joy of getting to hear another hour of Hey Beautiful is always made all the better thanks to your amazing efforts. Stay beautiful and awesome, Matthew. So nice, yeah, Matthew.
Thank you, Matthew.
That's so nice.
Matthew?
Thanks, Matthew. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, bro.
Thanks, bro. Oh, my God. This is what happens when we have more legendary moments than we're used to. We've been watching like 90 hours of Love Island a week. Thank you so much, Matthew. It's okay that you don't like this episode. Everyone has favorites and least favorites. As long as we all agree that Zuo is false. Zuo or false.
I can't wait
is
to get to
a
that
fucking
one.
Scourge.
Are we even going to review it? Or are we just going to have
it? It's going to be an hour fart sound. This is what it's going to be. From my actual butt. Okay, read this.
Our next legendary moment is from our patron Clint. Clint writes, "Hey, beautiful ladies. First off, let me just say a joyful upcoming solstice to you both. It's been a hell of a year, and you both have done heroine's work in bringing us this podcast. Thank you.
Thank you,
Buff. Thank you. Pip, pip, cheerio." All right. Oh my god.
What?
Happy Easter.
How did we forget?
I don't know. I can't let another minute go by.
You must think I'm such a heel. Happy Easter.
Oh my god. I'm crying.
You better come up to my fucking coffin and say that.
I'm going to leave an Easter egg.
Leave me a fucking Easter egg. Perfect.
No, she wants the headstone to be in an Easter egg shape.
And it just says Happy Easter forever.
She told me. No, it says Happy Easter.
I fucking hate you so much.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. All right,
sorry.
Joel. All right, go. Sorry, Clint.
All right. Sorry, Clint. Yes.
We're losing our minds.
Relax and have some Rachel's cookies and enjoy yourself this season. Hard to read through the tears. Ugh. As for this episode, there are a couple of legendary moments for me. One is Barney's quest to talk his way out of a traffic ticket. The gang's backstory is...
Sorry.
I just looked at you in the camera and I just started laughing again. Thinking about Happy...
I think we should explain
Happy Easter.
So we... It was on Easter, right? We just kept saying it to each other like we were the first one to say it.
I said it to you. Like, you said Happy Easter, and I said Happy Easter, and then we were talking, and then right before we left, or stopped talking, like, we were just ending our conversation, I was like, oh my god, Happy Easter. I was like, wait, I just
said it.
And so then the rest of the day, you kept telling me, oh my god, Happy Easter. I can't believe I didn't remember to tell you Happy Easter.
But like, we would do it in a way that, like, you might not expect, like, oh my god, guess what just happened? I forgot to say Happy Easter.
It was always these gotcha moments, and we have continued that until December the 1st.
8 months later. Anyway, that's why we've ruined your legendary moment, Clint. You're so welcome.
Sorry, Clint. All right. The gang's backstories, I'm not going to look at you, but gang's backstories and his attempts to recreate/top them make me smile every time. But the truly legmo here is the murder house. The cool Lecter-like delivery of Richard Greenleaf, along with Tony's completely clueless intuition regarding his friend, are only capped by Marshall's completely freaking out at his prospect of Ted helping Richard to do his laundry.
Yes.
One last thing before I sign off, realizing where the show takes us with the wrap-up of Tony and Stella, no spoilers. Didn't the epilogue of their California adventure seem a little like a potential spin-off pitch? Or am I just reading the room wrong? Stay beautiful, and here's to taking the leap in a couple of weeks.
Yay! Clint. Good ones. That's interesting. It totally could have been.
That is interesting.
Next up is Molly, and Molly's legendary moment is when the group is at the bar discussing talking your way out of a ticket, and Marshall says, "Are you kidding me? Robin's a pretty girl. Pretty girls don't get tickets. I bet Robin has been pulled over 1,000 times.
Maybe that's why I get tickets all the time.
Because I'm fucking ugly.
Fugly.
Fugly.
Ugly. Ugly.
Fugly slut. I bet Robin has been pulled over 1,000 times and not once gotten a ticket." And Robin says, "That is outrageous and factual." Good on Molly. Fucking A.
Nikki, another one of our patrons, writes in to tell us, "Hey, K&K, I am so excited to be submitting my very first legendary moment. Yay. I binged the podcast from the start and finally caught up. I love the content you both put out there and the different perspectives and personal stories you integrate into the podcast. My legendary moment this episode was Robin and Marshall's reactions to Ted telling them about the murder house he was asked to design. Specifically, Marshall's face when he was screaming, 'Ted, you can't build a murder house.' Very funny moment. Thanks for all that you do. I'm so happy to join the HB family, and I can't wait for the podcast. Hope you're both staying safe. Nikki."
Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
Next up is Rick. We are so close to the end, guys. "Hi, ladies. My legmo for this one is Barney trying to lie on behalf of Ted in front of Stella by saying, 'By the way, how's that hot French girl you're dating?' It's a very Barney way of addressing the problem, and I love a good Barney and Ted bro moment. I want to point out something about Barney's excursion on New Jersey highways. He must be driving on the turnpike, as it appears to have the right amount of lanes and is right by New York City." I'm loving this deep dive, Rick. "The small, densely packed single-family houses even look very accurate to Bergen County by the turnpike, too. However, there are signs for exit 7 and I-295, which would make it South Jersey. If true, Ted must be a really good friend to drive 2+ hours to the Camden / Philly area to bail Barney out. Rick." Good call. So is Brazzaville, New Jersey, not a real place?
It is not a real place. It is fake. I had that in my notes to bring up because I Googled it and nothing came up.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, I would.
Actually, everything came up about Himyun, so that's how I knew it was definitely fake.
Perfect. Three more.
All right. All right, David, a patron, writes, "Hello, K&K. Last couple of weeks have been busy and had to do a quick watch of the episode. My legendary moment is simple but makes me laugh every time. It's when Barney decides to challenge himself to talk his way out of the speeding ticket and says, 'Challenge, accept,' then points to Ted, followed by the group's reaction. Just makes me laugh. Also, when did Barney finish learning how to drive? Hopefully y'all discuss this when recording. Thanks, David."
Yeah, we don't know when.
At some point.
Yeah. All right, and next up, second to last, we have Sam P., another patron. "Hey, K&K, hope all is well. So while I usually try to avoid the obvious legmo so another part of the episode can be highlighted, the as-fast-as-you-can scene between Ted and Stella is just too damn good. It's one of the best moments of the series, not only because of the huge impact it has on Ted's season 4 growth, but because of how well-written, delivered, and relevant to real life it is. To paraphrase y'all, fuck you if you think Friends is better than this." Let's put that on a fucking shirt.
I love that.
It's so true. We do say that all the time.
But fuck you if you think Friends is better than this.
Like, this shit right here, way better. "My honorable mentions are this steak is so rare. And I gotta ease back into this. Allison has only one scene and still kills it, especially considering the scene she had to follow up."
Mm-hmm.
True. "P.S. I overreacted on Milt last episode. I was riled up, so thanks for putting it in perspective. Thanks, Sam." No need to explain yourself. I think it was a valid point. It was a valid point for sure. We gotta keep these old shows on their toes, you know what I mean?
How about it?
Oh my god, last but not least. Go for it.
Kalpesh. Kalpesh is not a patron, so it'll be short and sweet. Short and sweet. My ledge mode, the whole conversation about the big fat check.
Yay!
Check,
cool.
Spelled C-H-E-Q-U-E. I love it.
Love it, love it, love it. All right, what's your ledge mode, Caitlin?
Obviously, that whole, like, quote with Stella. This has to be.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I agree, and I'm also going to give it to Amir Talai, because what a fucking guest character.
Slow clap.
Amazing. Thank you so much to him for an amazing interview. Had such a good time with him. He's just like
such an entertaining listen to.
He feels like my brother from another mother. So thank you so much, Amir. We really, really appreciate you spending time with us.
Mm-hmm. Faux show.
And thank you to everyone who sent in all of your legendary moments this week. Holy all of them. Shit.
Even though we, I don't want to say we complained, but we discussed the amount. We loved it. Yeah. We loved all the love you give us.
It's amazing.
Us. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. And, you know, so thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next time for The Leap, which is the last episode of season 4. That is absolutely insane.
Yay!
So make sure to send your legendary moments to heybeautifulpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to put in the subject, The Leap, so that way we don't miss them. And if we're getting upwards of 20 legendary moments, there is a good chance it could get missed if you do not send it the right way. That's so right. heybeautifulpodcast@gmail.com, subject, The Leap. And of course, we want to give a big shout out and thank you to Rachel's Cookies and Treats for being our sponsor. If you love this recap, leave us an Apple Podcast review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher so you never miss a recap. We hope you'll come back next episode.
Because it's going to be extra legend. Wait for it.
This has been Hey Beautiful with your hosts Kate Gorton and Caitlin Turner. Our intro outro music is by Owl All.